You're listening to The Cube Show on demand. Get loud.
I really don't understand your question. I don't know if I can't hear or you guys can't talk in the mic or whatever.
Get crazy.
You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Get nuts.
Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah, it's gone.
It's The Cube Show.
It's that All Born Radio. Yeah.
I'm a good person.
Man, y'all take it easy down there on the off, baby.
God want us to win the World Championship.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing the wrong things.
Is anybody else tired or is it just me?
Hey, legitimate question, though.
Okay.
I'm drunk right now.
Wow.
Another one!
I!
And now, Cole Kublick.
He is bad Auburn man.
Happy Thursday. Happy Thursday, man.
Yeah.
It's wet. Gonna get a lot of rain today. Gonna get some storms. Everybody be weather aware. The storms are not coming from the Northeast in the New York Knicks, which is what I thought was happening for our phone restore call of the day. Mr. Kublick, Phil Jackson's crazy, right?
Yes.
Yep, Phil Jackson's supremely crazy. This is what he said about Kristaps Porzingis for our phone restore call of the day and missing his exit meeting.
I don't think I've ever had a player over 25 years of coaching, maybe 30, not coming to an exit meeting. Not happened to me. I know it happens to other people and other players. You know, his brother and his agent have said, you know, downplayed it, but you know, still it's a chance for a person to express themselves. And I had a real good relationship with Kristaps over the last 2 years, so it was kind of surprising.
It was surprising, even though you said...
Not happened to me.
Even though the research has found that it did happen to you in 2003. Shaquille O'Neal missed out on an exit meeting with you, and you were really ticked off at the time,
that's
too.
That's Shaquille O'Neal, though, Arky.
Yeah.
He's all-time great dominant center.
Yeah. Not happened to me.
Yeah, but it has happened to you. Absolutely it's happened to you. Liar. Liar and a jerk.
Wow.
At your phone restore call today, brought to you by our good friends at Phone Restore. Do you have the dreaded spider web going across the screen? What about the computer? Is it not working quite right? Give our friends at Phone Restore a chance to make you happy. Go to phonerestore.com to see some of the details on what they can do for you. Also to find out their location, get a map on it. But I'll just tell you where it's at. It's at 900 Bob Wallace Avenue. That's Phone Restore. Now, he also, I know the big deal has been Kristaps Porzingis, is what we talked about with Phil Jackson, but he has made his bones clear about the entirety of the New York Knicks roster, including Carmelo Anthony. And yesterday, when he was speaking to the media, he had a chance to dig in again at Carmelo.
You know, we haven't been successful, and it might be time for him to find an opportunity to go somewhere else. He's come back and said he'd just as soon stay. We're trying to start growing from the youth aspect of it. There will be conversations after the draft and after the free agency as teams start reorganizing their rosters. So there will be other conversations in the process.
I can't believe this guy constantly says this stuff.
You know, we haven't been successful, and it might be time for him to find an opportunity to go somewhere else.
That's not the first time he said it. He doesn't like anybody on this roster. He doesn't want to be anywhere near player personnel, does he?
Doesn't sound like it.
All he wants to do is just blow it up. And I'm not saying the Knicks are anywhere ready for an Eastern Conference championship, but if what happens in 2018 happens next offseason, if LeBron leaves, if Chris Paul is like in San Antonio, if Paul George is in Los Angeles, the Knicks could find themselves with a couple of pieces, including Kristaps Porzingis. They could find themselves chasing down the semifinals or a run at the Eastern Conference semifinals, because who's going to be left in that conference? I mean, you're going to have guys like Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to take over. The Eastern Conference could be a Boston Celtics, Philadelphia 76er type race. I mean, Toronto's going to completely blow up. Washington, who knows what they may be. This East could look very different just after next offseason. And Phil just sounds like he's completely given up on everybody.
I just,
I'm trying to put myself in his shoes and come up with what his plan is from a grand scheme of things. I don't. Is he trying to build? Does he want to? Is he trying to win now? I mean, we can laugh about it and say he's just trying to blow the whole thing up, sabotage, whatever. But I mean, I kind of can't even realistically believe that. But
really, if he gets rid of Kristaps Porzingis and gets rid of Carmelo Anthony, and then he's going to hopefully get Josh Jackson. Listen,
well, Carmelo is much more understandable than Porzingis. Well, the guy's a scorer,
expensive.
He doesn't defend, and he's costing him a ton of money.
But they also didn't have to re-sign him last year.
No, fair.
And Kristaps Porzingis, they used the number 4 pick on him 2 years ago. This wasn't
and
like,
and he's turned out to be worth it.
It's been worth it. It's not as if they spent the 27th pick on him and they're like, oh, okay, we turned out to be better than we thought. They thought that he was going to be good. He turned out to be good. Does he like Josh Jackson? Does he like Jason Tatum? Who does he like? Why even
he just
draft?
Said he likes Josh Jackson, I guess. Didn't he?
Right now, the Knicks have, I think, the number 8 pick, and it could be any number of players at that point. I don't know how much the Knicks would be interested in moving up. I don't know who's going to trade with them. But if Kristaps Porzingis is on the table, I mean, Boston could be a Kristaps Porzingis away from winning the Eastern Conference Finals next year. I mean, and Boston has a couple of players that they could give up. They have a first-round pick in number 3 this year that they could give up. They could give up next year's pick that they got in the trade with Philadelphia that they could end up getting. They could use that year or the one after that, and maybe even the one also after that. Depending on what happens as far as, if the picks are protected, a couple of them are, or both of them are protected, so it just sort of depends on where it falls in the draft. But this is ridiculous.
It's
trying not to let me have a team to root for in the NBA. Because I will not root for anybody other than my team in the NBA. Well, and he's really trying to screw it up.
You know, I keep going back to is prestige, history, ego, I guess just living off their name, is that working against the New York Knicks right now? Because people are going to go to games there. It's Madison Square Garden. It's the Knicks. Celebrities want their tickets there. They want to be seen there. They're going to go. Spike Lee's going to go. Jay-Z's going to go. Musicians who are in town, touring, performing, are going to go. You look at what that brand is, obviously the local television, I'd be willing to bet, does extremely well, even though the team's not great. So you got all these former players that are coming in, wanting to be a part of the team, want to be a part of the franchise. It's going to be heavily covered, not just because it's New York, because it's New York and it's the Knicks. And you kind of think about just what that team has meant to the NBA, and it reminds me a lot of the Washington Redskins 6-8 years ago when Dan Snyder was just, hey, man, we're the Redskins. I'm just going to go get Bruce Smith and Deion Sanders and anybody else that was really good at some point in time and bring them in, and we should win games because we're the Redskins and I have the money to do it. Instead of trusting the process, seeing what the blueprint was of other teams that are successful, and try and follow that. Instead of trying to follow the Steelers, the Packers, the Patriots model, it was spend, 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 and bring people in, either one, that had no business doing what they were doing, or two, just not listening to anybody. And I think Dan Snyder finally learned that if my team is ever going to compete, I better bring some people in that know what they're doing, and I need to listen to them, and we should probably be a little bit more intelligent with our spending. And I just think, I think back to what Phil Jackson has done in his life and his career, and some of these moves just don't make any sense. They just don't. And that's what the guy obviously knows basketball. It's not pretending like he doesn't know basketball. He does. So is it just ego? Is it
100% ego? He wants his offense run with Derek Fisher or Jeff Hornacek. No one runs that.
Is he still like hybrid coach, part-time coach?
No.
What was the deal going to be when he first signed up? Coach the home games or something stupid
that? No, no, it wasn't going to be that.
There was something dumb like that where he was going to be like, I can't remember what they called it.
They wanted him to be able to coach home games, but he wasn't. he was never going to do that.
Could you be our coach in practice?
He wants the triangle offense. Nobody runs that offense anymore. No players want to run out of offense. No player understands that offense completely. Nobody wants to do it. But he loves this offense because he had Michael and Scotty, and he had Kobe and Shaq run it for him and win a bunch of championships. And I would understand why he would feel that way. That would be what I would want too. But times have changed. And listen, for as much as the Knicks are talked about, historically they're not that great. They have two championships.
Fair.
Ain't done it since 73. Ain't won a conference title since 99, and that was a strike sorting season. Thanks to the Spurs for beating us that year. Also,
is there anything that can happen tonight as a Knicks fan that you will come in here tomorrow morning and feel better about your franchise?
Fire Phil Jackson tonight. Okay. At the draft. Fire him at the draft.
In front of the cameras?
And they're paying him like $11 million to do it. And that's what's so ridiculous about this entire thing. If there's any... Yeah, if the Knicks just stay put... And now, if they got rid of Carmelo, I would understand. That's a big contract. But no one's going to pay Carmelo and take that contract on unless he's going to be added in on a deal. Like, if you say it to Boston, here's the thing. You want Kristaps Porzingis? That's fine. You're going to have to take Carmelo Anthony, too. Or if you said to anybody, if you said to Phoenix or Sacramento, I don't know. If you want Kristaps, great. You have to take Carmelo, too. You have to take this money off the roster. Then I could understand how you would want to get rid of Carmelo Anthony. I'd be a little sad because he did help the team win the division a few years ago, and he wasn't completely unproductive. And the Knicks did have a brief resurgence in 2013. But aside from that, I mean, I don't want to be angry. And I do not want the Knicks to trade up. And if it involves Kristaps Porzingis, he's the one guy, if I was the Knicks, I would say is untouchable.
Okay.
And he's still got 2 years left on his rookie deal.
I would agree. I don't even know how you could consider, I mean, unless someone had, you know, kind of like a Boston-Brooklyn deal where you were close to a contender and had these draft picks and you were just willing to unload them to the Knicks, maybe. I get it. I mean, if New York is staring down the barrel of a top five pick and another first round pick, even next year, all right, I could kind of see it because maybe you're not there right now and maybe you don't even have what it takes to be able to go out and build around Porzingis, which is your fault anyway because you're spending so much money on Derrick Rose and Carmelo Anthony. Because let's be honest, those two guys aren't the pieces. Porzingis could be, I'm trying to think of even a fair comparison, he could be the next Kevin Garnett. And Carmelo and Derrick Rose are not enough to really even push them to compete in the Eastern Conference playoffs. They could get in, but advancing deep into, no, those guys aren't enough.
But if some certain things pan out for you going into next offseason, which would be huge to be able to say that LeBron goes to the West Coast and plays for the Lakers, and Paul George goes from Indiana and doesn't stay in conference, goes to the Lakers, then all of a sudden you're looking at Cleveland being a borderline playoff team. If they just had Kyrie and Kevin Love, and we'll see what that combination could possibly be. Then you look at Indiana, who would be down. Toronto is going to be completely dismantled after this offseason. You look at Chicago, who just barely got in with Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler. And then you look at maybe the team that you want to look for that you like is Boston or Milwaukee or even Philadelphia if they end up taking Markelle Fultz number one tonight. But then you got it. But then if you keep Kristaps and you draft somebody at eight, whether it's a Josh Jackson who may fall, I mean, to all the way to number eight, probably not. But we've seen these drafts go funny before. Jason Tatum could fall out of the way. Let me say this, and I'm just gonna be done for a minute on the NBA.
Okay.
Yesterday I was watching TV and I noticed the NFL Network. They have the first rounds of like the last seven NFL drafts, like where you can just watch them on demand.
Okay.
And I went back and I was watching the 2011 NFL draft again. This is how much things can just change on a dime. It was NFL Network's coverage, so Mike Mayock had Marcell Dareus number one. Did not have Cam Newton in the top 10 as far as best players.
Yeesh.
And Blaine Gabbert was ranked ahead of him.
There are a lot of guys.
No, I mean, they were above that. It's just how much that we think we can project versus what we know. This draft could look completely different by the time we come back in here tomorrow, and the Knicks could find themselves with a Tatum or something like that on their roster.
We'll see how it plays out. Let's get to 10 After Tweets, brought to you by First Family Mortgage. Go to 1FMC.com.
Bring me the tweets!
Why do you think that a lot of people will tune in for tonight's draft?
You know, last year's
rating be good?
Last year's draft was the worst rating it had had in, like, I think since 2012. It was not a good rating. This year, I imagine that's going to change. I think a lot of people want to see where Lonzo Ball goes. If he falls past Los Angeles at number two, then you're like, who takes him then? Who would want him? Because Boston's not going to take him at three. I'd imagine they wouldn't take him at three, but heaven only knows what Danny Ainge is going to do in Boston.
Adam Schefter tweets, any Raider doing long-term deal in future, Carr, Khalil Mack, Gabe Jackson, Amari Cooper, will structure it with Nevada's tax rate in mind, which is a huge deal. No state income tax versus California state income tax?
That's a little different.
That'll save you some coin. No doubt about it.
Is that the reason that Marshawn Lynch also came back? It's not just to pee in them hallways? Was to be able to negotiate against that future tax rate?
I believe so. Did you see this earthquake that was reported yesterday?
I did not.
Well, it was an accident. A robot journalist apparently reported an earthquake from 1925 yesterday. The LA Times tweeted, please note, we just deleted an automated tweet saying there was a 6.8 earthquake in Isla Vista. That earthquake happened in 1925.
What?
What if you live there and you read the LA Times saying that there was just a 6.8 earthquake and you're like, I didn't feel that one.
Are we good? Are the dishes okay? Did they fall? Are we good? Hey, can you? I'm just imagining that. Like, what kind of deep investigative reporting needs to be done for? Like, you're like, open up the pen. What is this?
6.8 is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I feel like I would have felt that.
USGS.
Oh, 80 years ago.
USGS tweeted, an errant earthquake notification was distributed at 4:49 Pacific over the earthquake notification system. It was caused by a revision of the historic 1925 6.8 Santa Barbara earthquake and was misinterpreted by software as a current event. We're working to resolve this issue.
I love that. Oh, my God, there's a... Oh. You know how... Do you, on your app, do you get, like, the weather thing that says, like, there's lightning in your area?
Oh, yeah.
Like, notification? Like, there's an earthquake in your area. Ah! Wait. Everybody be still.
Didn't feel it. Did not
feel it.
Man,
we must have jello legs, man. I didn't feel that at all. Must have been all that work on the medicine ball. With the medicine ball and on the old balance. What's the balance ball called? There's a name for it. Like the half ball that's sort of on the floor that you're supposed to stand on and work on your balance while people throw you the medicine ball. What's that called?
I mean, ball throws? Medicine ball throws?
But what's the actual ball that you're standing on?
That's the half ball?
Yeah.
It's like a BOSU ball.
So you're standing on the BOSU ball. It's all been all our work. Thanks to our work with the BOSU ball, our balance has been good.
Adam Schefter follows that up. Because there is no state tax in Nevada and California's state tax rate is 13.3%. Derek Carr could backload this new deal and save millions.
You don't think I would do that?
Pretty smart if you did. Adam Schefter tweets, SB Nation tweets, the Las Vegas Golden Knights officially have a roster. Would you like to hear it? Good, because I'm not reading it.
Oh, man. Give me a second. I would have been like, give it.
This is good news for you. You might be able to catch some on sale. Matt Powell at NPD Matt Powell tweets, in May, reported sales of Kyrie 3 were substantially less than Kyrie 2 in May last year. Fashion headwinds first hurt Curry, now Kyrie.
Uh-huh.
Catch some of those on sale.
Price drop.
I don't think they make them in 4E, though. That's going to be your problem.
I got a coupon. So this comes from Ray Silva who tweets, I think Jason Tatum is a really good player for the New York Knicks. That front court could be solid. but they still need a point guard. Well, the Knicks need a lot.
Yeah, they do.
And if they get rid of Kristaps Porzingis, they're going to need a lot more. Please, if you can do anything tonight, Knicks, just don't get rid of Kristaps Porzingis. I really, at this point, don't care who you draft. Just don't get rid of the unicorn.
All right, we'll get to a break. We'll come back with more Cube Show right after this.
Back live here in Cube Show in studio on this very, very beautiful, beautiful Thursday. I say beautiful because I love rain. Cole and I here with you for the next couple hours or so on this Thursday. And you know what I got a chance to give you tickets for right now? The Atlanta Baseball Braves got a game this weekend. You want to win a pair of tickets to see the Baseball Braves this Sunday against the Milwaukee Brewers. Stay tuned. Just a moment, I'll give you a chance to win them, tell you what you got to do to win them. That's coming up this weekend, that series with the Atlanta Braves. You can plan your vacation right now to SunTrust Park, where there's something for everyone. Weekends are selling fast, so go ahead and plan ahead. Get your tickets today. The most affordable tickets, consider a weekday game Monday through Thursday. That's Braves.com/summer for more details on that. So the Braves are obviously home here on the Ump and have been for a very, very long time. Your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Braves happening right now. You'll want our text number. It's 910-663-5663. That's 910-663-5663. I just want you to text in the phrase, Braves win. Braves win because they won last night in walk-off fashion against the San Francisco Giants. They wrap up that series. They'll try to win 3 out of 4 tonight right here on the Ump at 6:20. But this Sunday, they'll be finishing up a series on Sunday with the Milwaukee Brewers, and you can go there for free courtesy of us here on the Ump this Sunday, June 25th. A pair of tickets can be yours by just texting in the phrase that pays. Braves win to 910-663-5663. We're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, we're going to have Phil Savage, Alabama color commentator. You hear right here every Saturday on the Ump during Alabama football season. He's got a new book out that has a lot of interesting things about it, including how Phil Savage got in with Nick Saban, how they hired him to start doing things from here on out, because I don't see that relationship going anywhere, and why Nick Saban chewed out Lane Kiffin on the sidelines, even though they were winning by a bazillion last season. Yeah, that's all coming up, and the deets are coming up with Phil Savage himself next, right here on the Cube Show.
Welcome back in Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump. Excited to talk with Phil Savage, Executive Director of the Reese's Senior Bowl. You can hear him on SiriusXM and also right here on Ump Sports in the fall as color analyst next to Eli Gold calling Alabama Crimson Tide football. Phil, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Cole. Hope you're doing well.
Doing very well. Appreciate you taking some time to join us. Your book, Fourth and Goal Every Day, available now at Amazon.com. Some interesting parts of this that have sort of recently come out. I've seen you discussing a certain exchange between Nick Saban and Lane Kiffin that sort of became famous here in the state of Alabama. And a lot of people, we talked about it, we've laughed about it, we've wondered what it was. You have sort of an answer of what that was. What can you tell us about that infamous exchange between the former Alabama offensive coordinator and the Alabama head coach?
Yeah, this was, of course, at near the end of the Western Kentucky game last year when Alabama was winning the game 38-3. There was a play call that resulted in a turnover, and then Western Kentucky subsequently scored a touchdown right after, and Nick Saban wasn't very happy about it, and so there was a bit of an exchange over the headphones between coaches and staff. But the point of the story was that you know, Lane basically made sort of a disparaging comment about one of the players, and Nick Saban came to the player since. So the point of the story was to just show that, you know, while Nick Saban is seen as the stern taskmaster, he's very much in the corner of his players, and we've seen it play out time and time again. He often puts the players in front of the coaches, and that was
Phil Savage joining us, discussing fourth and goal every day. You can pre-order now, Amazon.com, available August 29th. What was the motivation behind you writing this book? When did you decide that you needed to sort of put pen to paper, so to speak?
Yeah, you know, I certainly when I went to become the color analyst, what has been now 8 seasons ago, going into my 9th year, never went there intending to write a book by any stretch of the imagination. 4 national championships in 8 years, a 5th, basically a second away. The 6 could have perhaps prevented Alabama from winning a 6th title in 8 years. It just was a situation where this is such a dominant, unprecedented era of college football, and I felt like that as a child in the state of Alabama and knowing what the tide was like in the 70s under Paul Bear Bryant, where they seemed to be in the hunt every single year. Spinning forward to my own football career in 1991 to 1995, I worked with Bill Belichick and Nick Saban, and a lot of what we've seen come out of the success of the Patriots and the success of the Alabama Crimson Tide under these two generational coaches is really sort of formulated in those years in Berea, Ohio. So then you propel forward to these last 8 years as a color analyst. I thought I could just kind of wrap it up in terms of the way all of this has come to life for Alabama with the success they've had. And so, you know, there would be a different perspective than what anybody else could bring to the table. So I was approached about a month after the national title game a year ago, so February of 2016, by Ray Gleer. He's a writer in Atlanta. We're longtime friends. And he said, you really should write a book about this because you bring a viewpoint to it that no one else has. And so we worked on it for 16 months, Cole, and it's coming out, of course, at the end of the summer. As you mentioned, it's available for daughter. Excited about it. I think not only Alabama fans, but I think football fans in general will really enjoy a lot of the backdrop, a lot of the background on where a lot of the philosophy has come from in terms of what is all the success for Alabama for the last decade.
Phil, one of the stories mentioned is sort of how you got so entrenched with Nick Saban, and talks about when you came on as an analyst in 2009 that you took it upon yourself to sort of email Coach Saban a detailed scouting report on the opponent for that week, and then Nick Saban, I think it was for Virginia Tech before that season, if I'm not mistaken. That you did a player by player detailed analysis, which you're so used to doing, and with being there with the Senior Bowl and watching tons of tape, and being in the NFL as well. I mean, how did Nick Saban receive that at first?
Yeah, it's kind of a funny story. What over the summer prior to my first year, 2009, we were playing Virginia Tech. It's going to be at the Georgia Dome. I'd never been a color analyst before, so I'd reached out my buddies Rich Gannon and David Norrie and Todd Blackledge and guys like that, say, hey, you know, give me some tips here. They said, you know, the background, the preparation is really the key to it. So I put together a series of notes on Virginia Tech. I called them radio notes. And Coach Saban's assistant, a lady by the name of Linda Leone, she was my assistant at the Browns when I was the GM there. She's now been Nick's assistant for the last 8 years. So about a week before that Tech game, I sent those radio notes to Linda and said, hey, here's some bathroom reading for Nick. I mean, I don't know if there's anything in there that could help him or not. But this is what I've worked on over the summer. And so I won the game, didn't think anything. But the day after the game, my wife and I phoned to New York just to go up there for a couple of days. And on Monday morning, all of a sudden, I get these frantic calls from Linda. Nick's looking for those notes on FIU. I'm like, what? I said, give me an hour, so I'll throw something together. I've worked on them a little bit over the summer. And really, since then, 107 games later, it's sort of become a ritual each week. You know, it's like the lucky penny, I guess. It's probably more superstition than actual substance.
Phil, have the note.
We'll try to reconnect with Phil Savage there, just having some issues with the phones. A cool story nonetheless, just about how he actually helps the team. He's not just a guy who tells you what he sees. He's not a guy who goes out and discusses exactly what's going to happen and what's happening on the field. But he's somebody who has a hand in helping this team prepare. I think that's a pretty cool story. And I don't know if there's many guys in that role across the country that actually are able to do that, can do that, want to do that, and more importantly, the coaching staff would allow them to do that. I think that's pretty impressive when you think about Phil Savage doing that and probably doing it as well or better than most others could when you think about what he does with the Senior Bowl, what he did as a general manager for the Browns. I mean, he knows personnel as well as anybody. Phil, sorry about that. We lost you for a moment, but glad to have you back. There was another story we saw about preparing for Texas A&M, and you discussed some things with Coach Saban about maybe their offensive line giving away run pass. Can you tell us how that came about?
Yeah, you know, last year when the Tide played A&M, of course, I think anybody with any sort of history on reading run pass with different, you know, you look at people's stances, their offensive line, receivers, what have you, it's pretty apparent that a series of plays would come out of this particular offense when their tackles used a parallel stance versus when they used a staggered stance. And, you know, again, you know, it was almost novice level, quite honestly. And, of course, Reuben Foster referenced it after the game. He had 12 tackles in that game, and, you know, there were times where he seemed to know what was coming, and I think all of that came really from the idea that they were able to read that out, and, you know, he was able to get those bird rabbit reads in terms of run or pass. So, you know, that was included in the story that came out on AL.com the other day. But that was just one example of many, many, many stories in the book, you know, about games that have been played and just sort of the detailed approach that, you know, they don't miss many tricks there in Tuscaloosa in terms of the study of their opponents. And as I said earlier, you know, my notes are kind of like Cliff notes compared to what his own staff does. Those guys spend tremendous amounts of time trying to look at the opponent, and they've done a great job with it. You combine that with big-time recruiting and player development, and there's easy reason why the Tide's been at or near the top for virtually the last decade or so.
Phil, there's one thing I've always been really curious to ask someone who really knows about, and I'm glad we have you on about this. It's talking about recruiting and how Nick Saban has sort of, for a long time now, sort of figured out a formula, some analytics, to give like a point value for different metrics that a potential recruit has, and that if a player doesn't meet these metrics, generally he won't offer the player to be able to fit whatever position that is. Do you have any insight to tell how those kind of metrics sort of came to be and what they entail and how specific that they get to where it could be just I don't know, inches away from offering one player versus the other for a position?
Yeah, Cole, this really goes all the way back to the 1960s. When the Dallas Cowboys were invented and came into the National Football League, Gil Brandt, Tex Schramm, and Tom Landry were the leaders of that organization, and they were the ones that really started to scout to a certain standard in terms of specific heights, weights, and speeds for positions. They were the first team to scout for character and also do player interviews individually. And so what happened was Gil was retired. You know, he was out when Jerry Jones took over the Cowboys in 1989, well, he did some consulting with us at the Browns in 1992 and basically helped install that system to Bill Belichick and the Browns in 92, height, weight, speed-oriented program. And And in essence, at least in my view, you know, Nick Saban has taken that, modified it to the college game. But, you know, if you don't meet certain prototypical height, weight, speed, and then pass the eyeball test with him at a summer camp or in a basketball game or at a track meet or what have you, then, you know, that you're not going to get a scholarship to Alabama. So they really can recruit to a certain standard, and that's why their defensive line, you know, they all look the same when they come out of the locker room. They're wide receivers, they're defensive backs. They all look very similar when they're out on the field in the pregame warm-up. It's almost like a cookie cutter or a machine that keeps spitting out these same players. And you go through, you know, through the years at all the different positions, and it's just one guy after another, and it never seems to be any drop-off in terms of the way they look and the way they play, and all of that really comes from their approach to recruiting.
Phil Savage joining us, Executive Director of the Reese's Senior Bowl. And, of course, we've been discussing his book that's coming out August 29th. You can pre-order it now at Amazon.com, Fourth and Goal Every Day. I do want to get just a little thought from you on this year's Alabama team. We mentioned sort of the incident with Robert Foster and the motorcycle accident earlier in the week, but that sort of brought me to that position and the depth at that position. I think we all know what Calvin Ridley is. A lot of people are excited about Jerry Jeudy, seeing him in the spring game, based on maybe some differences that we might see with Brian Daboll as the offensive coordinator. How important do you think it is for this team to get back to Atlanta for a receiver or receivers opposite of Calvin Ridley step up and be maybe what an Ardarius Stewart was last year?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really important, Cole, no doubt. I think when you look at the right side of the offensive line and the group of receivers overall, those are going to be two somewhat unproven parts of this Alabama offense. I really expect Calvin Ridley to be featured in this offense by Brian Daboll. But I also look for them to take some pressure off of the receivers and the quarterback by making Josh Jacobs more of a receiving threat out of the backfield. Of course, Daboll comes from the Patriots. We saw what they did with James White in the Super Bowl, where he had 10 catches out of the backfield. And Josh has that kind of ability. So between him and then, of course, the couple tight ends that are returning, I think they'll be able to take some of the pressure off of those wideouts until they can really all get on the same page. And you mentioned Jerry Jeudy. You mentioned Robert Foster, who's now going to have to recover from this dirt bike accident that apparently happened there in the parking lot in Tuscaloosa. And they should be A-OK, because I think this is going to be a team that really centers around the quarterback and the running back combination. You know, last year, those were two areas that were highly questionable going into the year. And, of course, now we have Jalen Hurts coming back with a full offseason under his belt, and then a stable of runners that they can turn and hand the ball to. So I think they'll be able to work through this receiver issue at least through the first few weeks of the season.
Do you expect to see many more two-back sets in this offense this year?
Well, they really don't have a true fullback in the program, per se. They've used these H-back or second tight end type of athletes to do that. But I would suspect that we'll see the utilization of two tight ends, which in essence is a pro-style or two-back set, the way they utilize those players. So, yeah, I would think that'll be a focal point. And I'm anxious to see how Brian Daboll, the new coordinator, incorporates some of the running elements of the quarterback game, you know, with Jalen and both Tua Tagovailoa. Both of those guys are dual-threat QBs, but he doesn't have a ton of experience, obviously, in utilizing a quarterback as a runner. So I think that's going to be something that he'll have to add to his portfolio here going into the year.
Phil, always great stuff. Appreciate the time, and let's do it again soon.
Okay, Cole, I appreciate it, man. Thank you, and we'll catch up before the season, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Phil Savage, Executive Director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, joining us there on the phones. Good stuff from him. Talking Alabama and his new book, Fourth and Goal Every Day, coming out August 29th.
Now, I understand. I really want to read this book. I understand this whole Josh Jacobs maybe making more of a receiving threat, but he should know. He's an analytics type guy. He should know about Josh Jacobs' elusive rating.
Yeah, like, I wasn't going to bring that up.
Can we DM that to him or something? Let him know?
Yeah, I'm sure he'll use it on air.
It's the highest of any returning running back. 165.1.
I think that might – he already knows that, and that's why he's saying he might have more of a role this year.
Okay.
Because the elusiveness will help him get open as a receiver.